for Success Express, your business, career, and financial radio magazine. Hosted by Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazines.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio Success Express Show. Today, we're excited to go from the basement to the boardroom. We're going to be doing that with Lee Brovedani. She is known as the Trust Architect. She is one of North America's leading experts on trust. She's also the author of Trust Me, Restore Belief and Confidence in an Uncertain World. Now, that book is timeless. It really is. I think we can keep that around for a long time. She's also the author of Trusted: Secret Lessons from an Inspired Leader, and she's a contributing author in four other books, and she's a regular guest expert here on Big Blend Radio, and she was also awarded the Lifetime Achievement Award as a top thought leader in trust by Trust Across America. You can keep up with her. Go to leebrovedani.com. That's Lee, LeeBrovedani.com. Did I get that right, Lee? And welcome
you
back.
You did. I'm always so impressed. And the fact that you always pronounce my name correctly.
It took a while. I had to learn. You know, that's why we do radio, and I usually cannot pronounce anyone's names, and they'll tell me, we'll do the whole thing. And then as soon as we start recording or go live,
you say it the wrong way.
I say it the wrong way. Does that not help? That helps the trust factor, right? Does it or does it not? Try, but you know.
Yeah. And we were just talking about the fact that, you know, perfect people can be kind of boring, and none of us are boring, right?
Oh, no.
That's right.
And we've all been in the basement.
Yes.
It's what happens in the boardroom. No, what happens in the boardroom. But this topic comes from your blog, and everyone's up on Lee's website, and I encourage you to keep up with her there. And I really love it because it talks about self-trust. And, you know, I think especially as young women going out into the workforce, whether you're starting your own company, whether you're working for someone else, you kind of have to, especially if you don't have a whole buttload of experience. Did I say buttload? See, I'm going
you
there.
You did say that?
I said buttload. A buttload of experience, then you kind of, you second guess yourself all the time. So how do you get to that stage of being confident and trusting yourself? You have to kind of start putting things in place like you did in your blog, in your story.
Yeah. Yeah. So for those who haven't read the story, this happened after I moved back from Denver, and I had been working for a larger company, and they opened up an office in the United States. And this was at a time when I was living in Calgary and doing what they called headhunting or placement in the oil industry, and they opened up kind of a sister office in Denver. And then the oil industry, this was in the 80s, so I'm dating myself, just went completely flat because of some of the politics that were happening in Canada. And overnight, all of the work that we had when I was living down in the States just dried up, and the office shut its doors. The company went bankrupt, and within less than a month, I think it was just a couple of weeks, I had this, I thought I was hot stuff. I had this corner office in Denver, and this was at a time when, you know, I had an assistant outside the door. I had a bar in my office, which I just,
oh,
I know.
Hello.
It was like,
yay.
Don't forget the sports car in your blog. You said you had a sports car.
I had
in the Mile High City. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was hot stuff.
My RX7 GX with a
T-convertible.
Yeah. I thought, and then had the corner office, bar in the office. And I would, you know, clients would come in and you'd actually say, can I get you a drink? In the office. It was just the bar.
Yeah.
So went from that office being completely shut down to moving back up to Calgary without any job opportunities. There just wasn't any at the time. So I'm the youngest of five. So one of my brothers said, well, you can move in to our place. We've got a spare bedroom in the basement.
Hello.
It became the people under the stairs.
So I went from my condo in Denver that was, you know, the fireplace, beautiful furniture, and my sports car to living in my brother's basement.
Yeah, that's a smack.
Yeah.
That's a big smack.
And now you have to pay for the sports car?
I did. Actually, I ended up having to just
say goodbye to it.
Say goodbye to the sports car.
Mm-hmm.
Got an old beater. Yeah. So it was one of those experiences that you go, okay, so this is how quickly life can turn.
Right.
Yeah. So. And then going from there, you were talking about how you needed to get going. So you started a company basically, and you know, had to go get business cards. I remember at one point, Nancy, you and I starting our magazine over after South Africa and everything. Right. We couldn't take everything out the way we had to leave. And so we had to start over. We got jobs when we got here. I worked three jobs. Then we were teaching musical organs. And then from there, we were like, we're not good at working for other people because we'll tell them other ways to, you know, creative ways of doing things. And we realized that we really need to do our profession, which we really love and miss. And besides, we liked making money for ourselves and not others, unless it's a nonprofit. Just kind of was like, you know what? We're doing all this work. We could be doing it for something we really believe in. But I remember in those days, just even printing, but now we've got VistaPrint and people like that.
Yeah.
Getting a business card. Nancy, you and I printed them. We created them, and you could, you know, do your own business card on your computer.
Yeah.
Computer was an important investment. So we print them, and then it had those jaggedy lines, and I'd be like trying to shave off the jags. So nobody
we'll cut it with the paper cutter.
I know. It's just like we can't let people see that they were printed off of our printer, but they were, and we're here.
Yeah.
We're here.
Yeah.
You know, and the same, I couldn't afford an office. I was working from home, and now everybody expects that you can work from home and you have a home office. But back then, it just wasn't done. You didn't. If you worked from home, it meant that it was because you couldn't afford an office in an office building downtown. So one of the new office buildings had, you know, the post office in there on the main floor. So I went and got a post office box. And then it had that it was, you know, it had the name of the building. I think it was Gulf Canada Square at the time. And there was a women's club. So I was able to join, and it was just not a very expensive monthly fee to be a member of what was kind of a prestigious women's club at the time. So now I had the box office number, which was with one of the more expensive buildings in town, and I could meet people at this women's club. And
go, go.
Yeah. And then had a friend of my parents create the business card for me because he was a graphic artist and charged me next to nothing and got them printed. So I could hand out these professional looking business cards and had a wonderful box office number. So when I'd meet clients, I'd say, well, why don't we meet for coffee at the club, which let me have an account. And I was so relieved, like with the first few clients, that I'd try and meet them when it wasn't around lunch because I couldn't afford to buy them lunch. I could afford coffee or tea. So I would meet them, buy them coffee, interview them if it was a client or if it was a candidate. So if I was interviewing candidates for positions, it was the same thing. I could interview them at a table. And the club would, when I'd walk in, they'd say, "Oh, hi, Lee. Can we seat you at your table?" So,
table.
Yeah,
and look, he's got her own table in the club. So the women's club let the men in there too.
They did, yeah. See? They did. They couldn't be members of the club, but they could certainly come in.
That's interesting because I think when you think about women's clubs, like women's clubs here in this country, typically, or now it's changing up a little bit, retirees and women keeping the historical documents of a community, but it also was women rallying around what a community needed, women's clubs. You know, when we lived in Julian up in the mountains, Nancy and I had this tiny cabin because we moved from the coast to the mountains. We loved it there. And we had a tiny cabin until we could find a house because there's limited real estate on the mountain. I mean, you're in a place where it was, when we were there, 3,600 people in this entire mountain and surrounding community. So houses were, and then when all the fires came, then there it really, then that's why we moved. But because a third of the homes burned down or something like that. So there was people with families and kids that needed the housing. But anyway, so we had this tiny cabin and we couldn't work together in there and still be friends. Now look at us driving around the country and whatever, but we're managing, you know. But, you know, so we thought, okay, let's go get an office. We are across from the police station, which was great because you could see who got arrested. It was fun. We were by the newspaper, but everybody just came in and drank our coffee.
And, at night, yeah.
You know, and if we were up doing a deadline at 2 a.m, when the bar closed down, they're like, those girls have wine in there. I know they do. And we'd have to like, get out and away from our wine. So we eventually just said, when we got a house, like, that's it. We're moving into our own place. But that area, we joined the women's club. They did a Penny for Pines project to save and reforest the local trees, which was really necessary, especially after the fires. They did so much. They got a skateboard for a park for the kids. They
did looked the music at what, thing.
The music thing. Program. I opened up the music chapter, did concerts to raise money for education for kids. So these clubs,
I think
they've changed over the years. And there's a lot of professional women's groups. And I think when you're starting out, that is one of those ways to propel yourself forward is to join those kind of organizations. Like you joined the Trust Across America organization, right? It's the same thing.
Yeah. Although, I mean, Trust Across America, it's more about trust. It's not about whether you're a man or a woman or whatever gender, you know, you associate with. But yeah, definitely joining that club has helped me to connect with other people who are talking about trust. And so I learned so much from them, because when you are doing this deep dive into one area, the first time I did this, you're thinking, man, you know, am I going too narrow? And all my focus is here. And what I've learned is that the more you focus on one area, the better you get and the more attractive you are to other people, because people don't, most of the time, they don't want someone who can do everything. They're looking for someone who is specifically talented or knowledgeable about one small area.
And trust is important because, you know, you've got your tenets of trust and people, you know, go to leaprovadanny.com for that. But it is about trusting yourself, because do you start to distrust others if you don't trust yourself? And I think it
how would you know?
Yeah.
Like if you don't trust your own judgment, it's kind of a catch-22. If you don't trust your own judgment, how can you trust your judgment on whether or not to trust somebody? You know, it kind of goes in a circle. So you're looking at someone and you know, you have to be able to trust your own judgment in order to make that assessment. Are they trustworthy? And it's why I came, you know, part of the reason the five tenets is it's simple, it's not easy, but you start recognizing whether or not you can trust them according to some very specific criteria.
I think you have to.
Go ahead. I was just going to ask her to give the five tenets of trust, but go ahead, Nancy. You go first.
No, I was just going to say, I think the other side of trusting yourself is to trust your reactions to something someone else has done or said to you. Because I find that the most difficult is to trust myself not to say exactly in the words I'm thinking to somebody else when they've said something I really, really don't like or don't appreciate or don't want to hear. It, you know, can you trust yourself to speak without still getting your point across, but not in such a direct manner? Maybe that's the way I should say it. Because I can
don't be pissy, Nancy.
I know. I can be really direct.
Which isn't so bad. You know, one of the things that I talk a lot about is being curious. Mm. So when someone says something, and I get called on it too, Nancy, because I am direct. You know, it's one of those things. And I don't even realize how direct I am until someone says, it's kind of the new terminology, I'm sorry, that doesn't sit right or land properly in my body. And I
try then move over.
You know, and I respect it, but still there's that thing where if I am talking to them, I think, okay, be respectful. Mm-hmm. Don't do an eye roll.
Oh, boy. She just rolled her eyes. She just rolled her eyes. Look at that.
I'm really good at that.
See, this is hard about that. Yeah, it's Zoom recordings are dangerous. Yeah, they're dangerous.
It's like juggling.
Yeah.
But go ahead. But that's part of it. Communication.
Say the five tenets, if you want me to. Okay.
Yeah.
The five tenets, and they all start with C. So the first one is caring, and I will trust somebody if I believe that they truly care about me. So caring, commitment. So doing what you said you would do long after the time has passed when you first said it, because it's easier to make a commitment when there's that first blush of something new. Mm-hmm. But do you keep the commitment even down the road?
Yeah.
And then, so caring, commitment, consistency. And we show up, consistency shows up in everything from making sure that your words and your actions match. So you meet, you know, I think we've all met people who say that they do something, and then when you watch how they are with people, you know, it can be something like, well, kindness is so important to me. And then you see them at a restaurant, and they're talking to the staff like they're nothing.
Like, yeah. Think,
so it's not, they don't believe in kindness. Mm. It's not really one of their values. They believe in kindness if it advances them. Mm. So consistency is actions and words matching, and being able to do the same thing. So I used to work in HR, and if someone's work was really, really perfect one day or really great one day, and then you'd go through a period of time where it just fell apart, then I would look to see if they had either a mental health issue. Isn't always the case, but had a mental health issue, or if they had an addictions issue, because a lot of times it's harder to trust somebody if they're in an addiction. So I learned by being an HR manager that if people were very inconsistent, not just in their work, but in their behavior, that I would look to see if it was an addictions or a mental health. So caring, commitment, consistency, and then competence. Mm-hmm. Do they actually have the skill? And out of all of the things with trust, if I'm hiring somebody, competence is something that if they're willing, you can train for. And so if you're listening to this and you've got staff and the other three are really strong, but they don't have the competence, if they have the will, then you can train them.
Right.
But I might trust people if they have all of them. But if it's something that takes a high level of skill, competence now is much higher on whether or not I trust them. So if I'm going into the hospital and if I'm have a surgeon, maybe if they don't have the best bedside manner and they're rude, that might not be as important for my trust towards them than their actual competence. So it really depends on what it is. And then the bedrock of all of it, or I kind of see it as the foundation, is communication. Can you communicate all of those? And communication is also being able to, it is a skill on its own as well. So can you express yourself? Can you stay curious rather than, you might have all of those skills, but can you actually show people that you have those skills with your communication? And communication is not just the words that we use, it's listening too. I'd say listening in a communication framework is more important than even what you say. Like, are you really hearing what people have to say? And if you misunderstand what they're saying rather than respond, get curious and listen a bit more and ask a few more questions. So all five of those work together. So it's caring, commitment, consistency, competence, and communication. So those are the five tenets.
I love this conversation and understanding the five. I want to bring that up on every time we have a conversation, because this just shows how important trust is. The way the world is now, the professional world, a lot of people are starting their own businesses or getting a side business, even if it's a gig job, if you're Ubering or whatever, you know, whatever you're doing, some need that. And then a lot are either going back to the boardroom or going back to the office, but the office is thinned out. So your trust is, as an employee or a leader, trust is key, being one of the few in the actual building. And then trust is key being back in the bedroom. Maybe your office is in the bedroom, you know, so you're going to have a background in Zoom like we do, because we're in bedrooms across America. That sounds so bad as we travel. But so a lot of people are going from the basement to the bedroom. I mean, the boardroom to the basement right now. So it's changing up. So trust is really crucial. And, you know, resume to showcase things, to show trust. I mean, have you done, like you're talking about caring, do you do volunteer work? I always say, put that on your resume. That is so important to see who you are, what you care about, or who you care about, that kind of thing. And if you're in between, you know, working to help at a nonprofit, now is a good time to do it. But that's why I think what's so good about what you're talking about, because while some others are going home and maybe starting a business or freelancing or still working in the same company, others are now going to go in and say, hey, there's an opening in this job over here. So the whole market is shifting. And if you do not have trust, then you're the shifty in the shifting.
Well, I think too,
this is shifting.
You have to be careful how you say it.
going through a pandemic, which is something most of us have never been through. I know it's negative on the outset, but there are opportunities now because everybody's shifting what they do from this to that. Some people are going back to the office. Most are not. Some are trying to figure out how to make it more tenable to work at home. Some people are loving that they're working at home, you know, and then the children, some are going back to school, some are not. So this is just this big flux of going from A to B to C, back to A, a little bit of B thrown in. So we're not settled yet. No. And so this is an area where I think you have to really trust yourself to, number one, calm down and try to look for the positive things that can happen rather than be in despair all the time. And obviously take the precautions you need to take to keep your family and yourself, you know, healthy, and look for avenues of something that you can do that you never thought you would be able to do. But it's look for the opportunities. That might sound a little, and I'm not always talking about money, but I'm talking about maybe sometimes something like this makes you branch out. And it turned out to be a really good thing to set you on a different path, doing something you never thought you'd want to do. And then you find out you do. You do want to. I mean, Lisa and I had to start over several times because we kept living in parts of Africa that went, get out.
It's time to leave.
Bye. and you don't get to take anything with you. Wow. So whatever. Yeah, you know, so after 10 years of work on a magazine in South Africa, you just bye, take it all. Okay. See ya. You know,
on to the next.
You have to trust yourself that you can make this happen. You can make it work. And I look at it as a really brilliant experiment and time of my life where I had a lot of freedom in Africa. And I mean, there was basically no laws, or let's say there were laws, but nobody cared. So businesses really did whatever they wanted. And you could really grow a business very quickly and turn a good profit. But then when you leave the country, they take it all away. So there you go. But I learned a lot. Yeah, I learned a lot. So I look at it as just a good experience, you know, even though there were hard times and negative parts to it, like there's to everything. But I don't know. I just think the pandemic kind of reminds me of that, that you have to, no matter what, stay positive and look for opportunities.
Yeah. And how many people know, like, your background and the work that you did in Africa is so interesting. And, the you know, like the some of the backstories, like, I think it would be fascinating to just have a conversation with the two of you around some of the stories from Africa when you were working for FOSSI. And, you know,
it wasn't FOSSI, it was
Joy Adamson.
FOSSI's
a gorilla lady.
Yeah,
she's a gorilla lady.
Yeah. But they were nearby. They were close. Yeah. I mean, East Africa, close. Rwanda, and that area, in the Congo. I think everything's nearby, so I should just shut up on that. But
if it's a drive away. So Joy Adamson, but just all of the adventures and some of the hair-raising adventures. I mean, there's not very many people who have had some of the, like, when you look back on them, do you ever think, wow, like, we just trusted we could get out of that situation? And when I look back, it could have gone either way. It could have gone
A lot of things can go either way. I mean, I find driving on the freeway, anything could go any way. You better watch it. You better be focused on your driving and not anything else, you know, because it can get real hairy real fast.
Yeah,
that's what Nancy says every time I put my hand in the gummy bear bag when I drive.
She wants her phone. I'm like, no.
I want my gummy bears.
No phone. No texting moving. While you're driving.
No eating the gummy bears.
No.
But that's when you just said that too, it's like you have to trust yourself to get through it, no matter how bad it is. And no matter how scared you are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And even when you start to do something that you're terrified about, even if you falter, you've just got to keep going. You just got to blunder through it. And, you know, and it's, you'll use that experience somewhere down the road, but you try to stay safe as much as you can, you know, but there are calculated risks. A lot of times of what we do, it's like, if you go to a place, you know, that's a scary place, or, you know, everybody's fear level is different. And what everybody, some people are scared of spiders, some snakes, some not, you know, I mean, we've been playing around in swamps with alligators for the last few weeks.
That's cool.
And people are like, oh, no, that's scary. And I'm like, no, he's cool. Like, look at him. And they're beautiful. I mean, they're really beautiful creatures. No, we're not going here. Coochie, coochie, coo. And being one of the idiots in national parks that get themselves hurt and then consequently the animal hurt. You have a healthy relationship distance. You know, that's wildlife can teach you social distancing.
That's true.
It's a calculated risk. It's, you know, because anything could change in that moment that you're on the bank looking at the alligator going, hi, anything could change at that moment, but you have to trust yourself. Did you see, is there a way out? If something happens, what are you going to do? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's what I think it's all about. And that's why I think what you're talking about now is so crucial. Self-trust. I think with everything that is happening right now, it is like a big dance. When you think about it, all the shift and change, it's like a dance. Well, and you need to trust your foot, where your foot is going to land.
You know, you just said, like, the what if, you know, I mean, that's a really good way of looking at any new situation. It's go through the what ifs. What if this happens? What if that happens? What are you going to do? It's too late when something happens to think about what you're going to do. That's not going to be your best response. So if you go into something, any kind of a business meeting, the boardroom, what if this happens? Oh, well, then I'm going to do this. If this happens, I'm going to do that. It may or may not end up be what you really said you were going to do, you know, but at least you've made yourself calm by having a clear path of action.
Like what you did with the business cards and the P.O. box and knowing that didn't that give you that confidence, that breath of like, and you took steps. Self-trust comes from taking steps. Was it actually the actual steps you took that helped you move forward?
Yeah, part of it. And you know, honestly, survival. Mm-hmm. You know, you have talked about it as well. When there aren't any jobs out there and you're still hungry and you want to eat, then you make your own opportunities.
That's right.
And I'm just not someone who can sit around and feel sorry for myself for a while. My husband and I have this thing where we say, you know, you're allowed to wallow in self-pity for a little bit of time and just do the woe is me. And then you get off your butt and you do something.
Exactly.
Because if you sit in that little pool of pity, then pretty soon it starts to dissolve you. It's like acid.
It's stinky.
Yeah.
It's stinky.
It's really quicksand.
Yeah.
You know, it keeps sucking you under until there's nothing left.
We just go and swear it out or whatever we want to do. Have a glass of wine and move on, because you really don't have time. You can't let it linger. It's like anger. You don't want to keep anger. It festers and kills. It does. Yeah. And it creates disease.
You get ulcers and all sorts of things. So
I think it's
something though about anger, which I loved. And for, you know, like I told you, I'm doing this doula course right now. So
yeah,
we talk about kind of next steps. And it's really, I mean, some of the coursework.
You're
is
not doing
amazing.
The birthing doula. You're doing people to the other side.
So
the
end of life. Death doula sounds like,
yeah,
but it is a rebirth in a weird way, like I think. But anyway,
but they talk about anger because you deal with a lot of anger for end of life. You know, not just the person who's dying, who might move through anger, getting to a place of acceptance, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes you have to accept the fact that there's not this beautiful ending. So anger, one of the things that I loved hearing was anger is pain asking for compassion.
Mm-hmm.
So even our own anger is pain asking for compassion. So being able to turn that compassion onto ourselves and saying, like, what is it I'm angry about? Because anger usually, and I studied emotional intelligence for years before I just narrowed it to trust. And so there aren't good and bad emotions. It's one of the things that you learn when you're going through it. They give you a source of information, and it's how you act on the information that makes the difference between a good and a bad outcome. So anger is just something that gives you information.
That's good.
And sometimes it gets you off your butt.
Yeah.
You know, that you get so mad at something and finally something clicks that goes, well, why don't you do something about
it? Well, that's how the women's, you know, suffrage movement happened. How many things get changed in the world through anger or frustration of something not working? Jobs and businesses are created, inventions are made.
Yeah.
I'm really mad at my toaster, so I'm going to invent one that's better. I want my bagel to fit in the toaster. Every morning I try to shove my bagel in the toaster. The poppy seeds fall off. I get mad.
They have toasters that even
have bagel written. I know. And then someone said, I'm so frustrated without being able to shove my bagel in the toaster. You start your day off all angry and crappy all over a bagel. Let's widen the gap. Let's make the bagel toaster. The bagel toaster comes out. Breakfast is beautiful and you're off to a good day. Yeah. I'm just saying. See,
it came from anger. So you know, you can use that emotion to make a better toaster.
Examples are going to pop out literally.
In the boardroom once, there was a meeting when I used to work for the Automobile Club, and I had my own office, and so there's all these office managers together, and I was the only woman. And all these men, and they're always like 15, 20 years older than I was, and they all got in the break room, and there was coffee. So everybody was sitting down, so I sat down. And then they just looked at me and went, coffee. And I was like, C-O-F-F-E-E. And they looked, and I'm like, that's how you spell it. Wasn't that what you were asking? Then one guy got up, and he got me a cup of coffee. And I'm like, two sugars, please. So I was so angry. Now it seems funny.
But that's also just for you to say that.
You react. I mean, you could have said, swear word, coffee.
Right.
It was close.
It was close. It was more like take your meeting and shove it, you know where.
Yeah, but you used your anger to use humor and got a good result. So that, you know,
that is a good result. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. That was really cool.
So, I'm still mad though.
I know that you work with a lot of companies and leaders and HR. What about the individuals that are embarking on all this newness and, you know, trying to build their confidence level of something new that they may not have all their ducks in the row yet, but need to get to that spot and maybe not even have the time to, they need to move on it. Because, you know, like you're saying right now, there's survival going on everywhere.
Yeah.
And so that breeds some tension.
I've got a coaching program that I'm doing right now for leaders. And, working with a brilliant high level lawyer who is a woman, and not that that makes a difference because, you know, like, but part of it is trusting herself and moving her forward in areas that she's stuck. And one of the things that I've learned and I've in all my coaching courses that I've taken is that I don't come up with the answers. I pull the wisdom from the person, because most people have the wisdom. It's just a matter of finding it and directing it and then letting them come to the best decision for them.
I like that. That makes sense.
That makes sense.
Because every person is different and how their thought patterns and, you know, all of that. So I think trust is absolute key, especially now. So good blogs, you know, I'm enjoying your blogs. You know, you get us thinking, you know, negative wisdom, a story. You always tell stories, you know, just like, trust me, you are people's stories. And we learn from the stories. They're examples, you know, where people can connect with and connect with other people. So I love when you do that. But everyone, again, LeeBrovaDanny.com is the website. And you can get her two books. There's Trusted, Secret Lessons from an Inspired Leader. And also Trust Me, Restore Belief and Confidence in an Uncertain World. It's a good time to read that one.
Yes.
And also, Lee, people can book a conversation with you, right? Just like a consultation to see if, you know, they can work with you or need help or...
Yeah, there's definitely no charge to see if I'm the right...
There's a trust call. The trust call.
Yeah, it's, you know, and if I'm not, then... That's okay too, because there's times when I've had people call and talk to me and I've said, you know, I'm not the right person for you, but call this person because I don't think I do myself a favor or the person who calls me a favor if I'm not the best fit for them.
Right. Awesome. Awesome. So everything's up on LeeBrovaDanny.com. Thank you all for joining us here on Big Blend Radio Success Express Show. Go make a bagel in the big toaster. also keep
you
up
can,
with us.
You can.
We air Big Blend Radio Monday through Friday. Just go to bigblendradio.com. You can watch on YouTube, Facebook. We're on every podcast outlet you can imagine, from iHeartRadio, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Spotify, all of it. It's there. So it's all on bigblendradio.com. And also when you go to bigblendradio.com, please sign up for our newsletter, because then you'll get our different magazines in your email box, and Success Express Business and Career Magazine is on the way. It's getting there. We're working on it. We got a whole bunch of magazines to get out there, and we're doing it in between alligator time. Yes. Thanks, everybody. Thank you so much, Lee.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks, Nancy. Stay safe.
You too.